Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is Building Trauma-Informed Workplaces. I am super excited because today we get to talk about something that may seem a little odd as a topic for a trauma-informed workplace podcast, but I promise you it's not. It's a perfect topic, and it's actually going to be a really fun topic. Hopefully, if we succeed, which I'm confident based on our guests, we will be successful. But we have a fantastic guest here today to help us talk about humor. Peter, thank you so much for joining us. And I would love if you went ahead and introduce yourself.
Happy to. Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. So I'll go way back just to give people the full context. I actually came to America based on a misunderstanding, as it turns out. So I was 10 years old, having a nice beer in my local pub. And behind the counter, I see this unique looking kind of antique sign. And it was from America. It was an old sign that said, "No Irish need apply." And I thought, this is awesome. Automatic jobs for the Irish with no need to go through the application process. So over I came. All right, I'll be a bit more serious now for a second. So here I am. I am from Ireland and have been in the States since graduating from a master's program at University College Dublin. Studied HR and management and all that kind of thing. And now, 20 years into a corporate career, I took a departure and decided to do this culture doctor practice that I now do for the last 8 years, which involves culture strategy and also quite a bit of executive placement of HR leaders. And I do like humor. And I guess we're going to talk about that today.
Absolutely. You are also well known for having an amazing sense of humor. I've seen Peter do some HR-themed stand-up at conferences, and I think I cornered him at the last Transform conference, and I'm like, you're hilarious. You're the funny guy. So, high standard, but we've already got a laugh in on the podcast. So I think we're off to a great start. But I'm so excited about this because I, too, enjoy humor. I think most of us do. We have our own senses of humor, but I love humor and I love integrating humor into my work. If you follow me on social media, you probably see a lot of my Simpsons themed memes.
I've seen many of them. Love them.
One of my life goals is to have a big sign that says everything's coming up Milhouse. But like to me, it's just really important to like infuse humor. And it can be tricky sometimes when, you know, especially the work I do talking about trauma-informed workplaces, probably talk about humor, being funny, having a sense of humor doesn't automatically pop into people's mind. Maybe, you know, HR, it doesn't necessarily pop into people's mind, which I know we'll spend some time talking about. You also hear about, you know, people who have a kind of a gallows sense of humor, if you've heard the term, people who work in really tough, difficult fields and trying to find a way to use humor as a coping mechanism. And before we dive into the full conversation, I wanted to spend a couple minutes and explore humor as a coping mechanism. Because I think, so humor is a coping mechanism, first and foremost. I think, however, so often when we hear, oh, you're using humor as a coping mechanism, there's a negative connotation around that. But it doesn't have to be. Humor is actually a really positive coping mechanism. Coping mechanism helps us, you know, deal with all the stuff in life, including trauma and including those hard things. And examples of where humor can help us is it can, you know, provide a way to understand, have a laugh, think about reframing our experiences, relieve stress. Like how much stress is it relieved? You know, just have a quick laugh over the day. It can also help us create connection. I know like Peter and I, we both like to laugh. We both like humor. So therein lies one of the great ways we've been able to connect right here on this podcast. And also, this is a word people throw around a lot, resilience. Humor is actually really amazing in helping cultivate resilience as well. Finding levity in difficult situations, maybe, you know, a tough experience that you had in the past, finding the humor in that can promote resilience. For example, one time I was at a cousin's wedding, and there I had this really cute dress with a zipper all the way up in the back, and it broke open. The zipper broke. No. And it was like a hospital gown. I was devastated. There's no other way to describe it. My dress hospital gown and my cousin's wedding reception. I was devastated. I was so upset in that moment. It is now a deeply hilarious story because, well, who has a dress that like hospital gowns? It's also very funny because my mom came into the bathroom and was like, well, just turn it around. And I'm like, I don't know how that helps. But, you know, that's the beauty of humor.
Tragedy for crime, maybe.
Yes. Yes. That's the power of humor. And that's what we want to focus on today. That's what we're going to talk about today. I would be a bad podcast host. I wouldn't be doing my due diligence if I didn't also acknowledge that humor can become a maladaptive coping strategy as well. Like most things, when it's overused or used inappropriately. So if you're using it to avoid or dismiss your own or others' emotional pain, if you're undermining seriousness in a moment that's maybe not appropriate, if you're using it in a way that may alienate others, sarcasm is a big culprit there. Mm-hmm. Or if you're, you know, overusing it to mask your own vulnerability, to mask your own emotions, not deal with things, that's where it can become one of those maladaptive coping strategies. But I want us to get super clear on the fact that I'm a firm believer, by and large, humor is a positive coping strategy, and we should do a better job harnessing it in a deliberate way in just about all facets of our life, including the workplace. So that's primarily where we're going to focus our conversation today, around humor at work, and how we can all use that as a coping mechanism, as a way to just enjoy the workplaces more.
Perfect. Yeah.
Amazing.
For a second there, when you're on the maladaptive angle, I was like, wait a second, is this an intervention?
intervention.
I knew it. but yeah, 100% on the same page. I think that, you know, a lot of my culture projects involve competency analyses, where we'll look maybe at a set of competencies to help define the values in an organization. And the thing about competencies, much like coping mechanisms, is they can become a problem if they're overused. If, right. You know, yes. You become this hammer and everything begins to look like a nail, if mm-hmm. all you do is joke around, then clearly, and there could be some challenges there and some things you're not dealing with. So, yes, I'm still thinking about your hospital gown dress, you poor thing. I have a similar and way less traumatic story from my youth. It was so much less traumatic that I was able to joke about it in real time. So basically, picture 15-year-old Peter back in Ireland, half asleep, getting dressed, going into school. It was an easy kind of brainless process to get dressed in our school because it was a uniform. We all wore the same thing. It was like, you know, all autopilot, or so I thought. It was easy. I'm waiting for my first period, and my funny friend, John Ray, looks down at my shoes and says, oh, beautiful shoes, Peter. I bet you got a very similar pair at home. And I looked down, and to my horror, I was wearing one black shoe and one gray shoe.
New style.
Yes, unintended. And John was pointing and laughing, and his joke was so good that I was actually able to laugh maybe 30 seconds later and asked for permission to quickly go home and change shoes, or change shoe. One of them was fine.
Change shoe.
But yes, yeah, definitely can be a very helpful tool in lots of ways we'll cover today. But yeah, probably need to be mindful of potential overuse.
Yes. And I think that's true of everything. If you are overusing anything, even as a strengths coach, I talk, if you're overusing your strengths, you are potentially not using them as a strength anymore. Overuse is always kind of the watch out. And humor is an interesting one with that, because there are these, there's this magic skill of learning to read the room. And you always know, like, the person who, like, tells a joke and it was like, no, this was not the moment for a joke, versus the person who tells a well-timed joke and it can kind of relieve the tension in the room or conversation, and kind of navigating that difference. But I'd love to chat and kind of start, you know, you are, you know, by and large in the HR field, an HR professional with your work, and HR professionals want to be taken seriously. I know I spent the majority of my career like, hey, look at me, take me seriously. I've got my top hat and monocle and I'm ready for a seat at the table. So HR and humor especially almost seems a little counterintuitive or counterproductive. So tell me how HR can professionals, you know, professionals who want to be taken seriously, even outside of HR, how can you leverage humor and have it be productive and have it help you achieve that goal of still being taken seriously as a professional?
Yeah. So, you know, I would call to mind the image of Toby, you know, the underappreciated and not particularly funny HR guy in the corner of the office. And it, you know, I begin, what could Toby have done to be a bit more, you know, credible, a bit more part of the team? And I could think about my own journey. And I don't know if you've come across the trust equation from the trusted advisor tome. So I came across that at a pretty early phase of my career. I was sent off by an ad agency for a week of training in beautiful Basking Ridge, New Jersey, on the whole trusted advisor methodology, including the trust equation. And for the audience, real quick, basically it's trustworthiness, and then picture like a mathematical formula equals kind of knowing your subject matter times being reliable. So it's showing up, keeping your commitments, times being comfortable, the other party being comfortable kind of sharing their darkest fears and hopes. That's kind of the intimacy factor in the equation. And then underneath that, there is self-orientation. So if you're magnifying the subject matter expertise, the reliability, and they're comfortable with you, and those are all increasing trust, and then below the line, if you're too self-oriented, you will decrease trust. So I've kind of, my humor spin on that is to be expert enough at something to where you can actually be funny at it. I consider that to be some indicator of mastery. And I'm now friendly with Charlie Green of the Trusted Advisor fame, one of the co-authors, and he recently agreed with me and was kind enough to give my humor an endorsement. So it's kind of, if you're so good at your subject matter expertise that you can be funny about it, then that's kind of thing one. And then the reliability and showing up, hopefully you're not just a funny flake, you show keep your commitments. And then the intimacy one, humor can help with that as well. And the sort of science of laughter and humor is fascinating, where your body will kind of release endorphins, oxytocin, dopamine, just from this like humorous moment, which makes you feel good and also has a connection effect. Like, I feel connected to Jim Gaffigan, and I've never spoken to the man, but he's so funny, and his, you know, humor.
You don't secretly know him. I feel like you guys are supposed to be friends.
So I've been I look like him, especially when I say, say things like, "You're never really glad you had a Hot Pocket." conversation, but yeah, I think we need to be friends, but so far we're not. But still, I feel the connection because of the kind of the chemistry of laughter. So back to our HR professional, if you're kind of showing enough subject matter expertise to be able to joke about it, and you're able to make people laugh, then you've covered two of the three trust magnifiers. So I think your relationship is going to be on the right track.
I love that. I think it's great. I've also found that I think it's being an HR professional and even to some extent being a woman in the workplace, you kind of surprise people when you present a sense of humor. And there's lots of data out there about, oh, what happens when women make jokes? What happens when men make jokes? Whatever. I don't care. I'm a big believer that, like you said, humor for me, when I'm applying it well, when it's something I know, something I can talk about, it has only ever helped me enhance those relationships mm-hmm. or, you know, diffuse a challenging moment. And I think one thing that's tricky for HR professionals, especially in-house HR professionals, is there's this weird, like, ooh, it's HR. Like, oh, it's the principal. Like, I don't know about this person. I don't know if I can trust them. Like, what's their deal? Everyone be quiet. HR just showed up. And I think humor is such a beautiful way to actually work past that and diffuse the, oh, no, everyone be quiet. HR is here. Doesn't mean like you can't take things seriously when they are serious. It means you're able to kind of understand the difference between the moments where we can have fun and laugh and the moments where, okay, yeah, this is serious. Like, please, as an HR professional, crack a joke during a layoff. But if you are during a meeting, you know, talking about something, yeah, you could make a joke about benefits open enrollment. About like, yes. Oh, yeah, benefits open enrollment. Maybe finally this year you guys will read my emails. Like, there's opportunities. It's just understanding how you can navigate those right moments. So I love that. And I love how you kind of layered that within that trust equation. I think it's really powerful. So, well, you know, you talked about that training. But when did you kind of, you know, catch the, I hate to say like catch the humor bug. I feel a lot of people, you know, have a sense of humor. It kind of grows with them throughout their life. But how did you kind of catch it in the sense of really being thoughtful about how it shows up for you in your professional life as well?
Yeah. So, I was always into humor. And maybe in the early days, I may have even failed to read a room or two. Hopefully I fixed that pretty early in the game. My wife might disagree. Speaking of just coping mechanisms, you know, she has a pretty disciplined regimen of getting up early and doing yoga and journaling. You know, she's amazing. Just the getting up early part leaves me in awe.
Yes.
But for me, my self-care, of course, we both like to exercise and eat well and things, the basics. But for me, the only other regimen I have is humor. So she'll be doing her yoga and her journaling. I'll turn on the late night monologues from the previous night. And then that'll be breakfast and I'll be ready for my day and I'll be smiling and good to go. Like, that's my kind of self-care regime. And unless I'm blissfully oblivious to maladies that I don't know are going on, I'm happy as a clan just with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it goes back to my youth. Just loved you know, some of the great British comedy that was, you know, popular in Ireland in the 80s, and then American comedy, and kind of I probably live in New York because of, you know, what, seeing Friends and Seinfeld in the 90s. So lifelong relationship kind of outside of work. And then within work, you mentioned benefits enrollment. One of my first remits in HR was in Total Rewards. And even though it was my day job, I kind of knew it wasn't that interesting. And there was a reason why people weren't reading the emails. So I began a bit of an edutainment push and always tried to make open enrollment funny, and got so much material together that I actually became a columnist for Employee Benefit News. And so for 3 years, did a monthly column on benefits humor from 2005 to 2008. And it was a lot of fun just kind of taking this very dry material about, you know, co-insurance versus co-pays, and oh my God, networks versus in that. But, you know, fighting the good fight and trying to make it funny. And that kind of helped with my own career in terms of the mastery piece. And, you know, I just kept going with it. And then I started applying humor to more scenarios, of course, being careful not to apply it where inappropriate. But yeah, it's kind of like your experience. I can't recall any situation where it didn't serve me well. Even sometimes I took a little bit of a risk. I remember when I was working at Bloomberg, my day job was at Bloomberg. I was fortunate enough to have the credibility and sort of subject matter expertise to pitch the idea of kind of personal finance with a benefits emphasis, humor, for the radio. So this was like the external radio, WBBR AM 1130, with all the listeners on Bloomberg.com and everything. And they were like, yeah, I don't think so, Peter. On the magazine, first of all, before I got to the radio, they said no, TV said no, a magazine said no, but then radio said yes. And the only hitch was it had to be on the weekend for the markets were closed because those serious numbers to talk about during the week. So careful enough to make sure that I didn't say anything incorrect as I was telling people about optimizing their 401k plans. And it was in a funny way where basically a fake listener would write in a very bizarre letter and I would, you know, talk sensible stuff. I was kind of like an agony, you know, like an agony aunt. I was sort of the agony uncle of personal finance and employee benefits. So the risk wasn't there. That was just good stuff. But then I was also had a day job of being the HR person for or one of the many big company for Bloomberg. And this one time, there was a 401k enrollment meeting and Bloomberg had just enhanced the plan. It was great news. And so I was doing a bit of a tour and answering lots of questions in these live sessions around the country. And I went to DC and people were super excited. Oh, the match was better than ever. It was all roses. But this one woman kept raising her hand with these kind of negatively framed questions. Like no matter what slide I was on, she'd be like, so yeah, that's great that we can choose, which funds we're investing in on periodically, but what happens when you're no longer with the company? I bet you can't change your funds then. I was like, actually, you can. Okay. And she's like, oh, the match sounds great, but I bet you don't get to keep that when you leave the company. I'm like, yeah, actually, you can. So slide after slide, she was like saying this is negative things and also talking about what happens after you leave. So about 30 minutes in, I was like, I'm kind of getting concerned that you might resign before the end of this meeting. And she cracked up. She'd been kind of sour-faced the whole time. She cracked up laughing, as does the room. I can't think of any scenario where the humor thing hasn't, broken tension, increased communication, made points more memorable, and just like connected with people.
I love that. I love you how you framed poor benefits, poor total rewards. It's such a hard job because it's really, really important. And it's so weird because no one cares, but they really care. You know what I mean? It's like no one cares, but at the same time, they really deeply care because, total rewards is why you work, compensation, benefits, all those things. So I love how you frame like the edutainment, like how can I educate? How can I get folks on board with the tool of humor to really power that? And I think that that's a fantastic perspective and really kind of makes sense for how you integrate it as an HR professional. Do you find yourself, doing some of the culture work you do, kind of leveraging that edutainment strategy as well?
I do, the culture projects they're often fairly kind of education heavy. And so, if you're going to quickly say introduce a competency model to the stakeholders so that they can use it effectively to inform, to develop a data set that maybe informs the draft values for the company or something, then they do have to kind of understand it. So that the more we can kind of quickly explain the model and have them grok it, the better the outcomes might be. And sometimes, I can share horror stories from my other clients. You never want to kind of like, I think humor has a very, hopefully we can talk about this in a sec, but kind of using humor as a third space can be very powerful in kind of one-on-one situations where you kind of, much like maybe using a DISC profile or something else that kind of takes it away from people potentially being personally offended. Humor itself can be a sort of a third space thing if you don't have an organizational development tool to use for a particular use case. But getting back to the horror story, so I will often cite with a new client, let's rank these competencies very carefully. It's going to be a confidential process. If it weren't confidential, then, there'd be all these kind of factors in the room. If we're doing a whiteboard session in a conference room, and, the person in the room who's determining your next option grant and bonus, you might be overly inclined to agree with, oh yeah, our culture is really all about XYZ, because you said it, boss, CEO. And I say, why we don't do that is obvious. And the results of not doing it can be pretty powerful, because once you don't do that, then I've had clients where the CEO did think their culture was all about XYZ. I was, no way that the data is going to come back any different, Peter. This is what we're all about. And then lo and behold, if we do the surveys in a safe one-on-one space, no conference rooms involved, no politics, no groupthink, I might come back to the CEO at the end and say, we're actually all about XYW. And every time you say Z, you actually lose credibility, because out of the 38 competencies in our model, that scored 33rd, you're the only one who thinks that's a strength because you love it, but we need to do some work. Meanwhile, good news, that W is a hidden strength you didn't even know we had. So maybe those are the initial values we work towards making Z one in the future. Yeah, I think the humor thing touches every part of my work, to different extents. And the storytelling and horror stories can be a very quick way to communicate an idea.
Absolutely. I love that. So you mentioned humor is a third space, and this is fascinating. So tell us more. What do you mean? Kind of how does that work? Love the example you provided. You might have a DISC profile or a strengths profile, but humor can also be a tool to leverage. Give us an example or help us understand more of what that might look like.
Profiles and all these other tools are a great way of explaining, kind of taking, it's not about Peter and Stephanie. It's not a Peter and Stephanie thing. It's that you're an I and I'm a S, or you're a D and I'm a C. And then all of a sudden the defenses come down. So, oh yeah, people are wired differently. Oh, interesting science, blah, blah, blah. So kind of in the way I've been using humor as a third space thing is to kind of describe, human dynamics that might not necessarily, I might not have done this to the people. I might not be able to, do that. But I'd, talk about the taking the names away and just describing the dynamic between two human beings. And, maybe it's an underperforming employee, and talking not so much about, did you write up the PIP for Gary or whatever? And he'd be like, has person B ever been given very clear direction on what the expectations are? And, or maybe being funny about just describing an expectation of a certain, has this miller, ever been given the flower or not, what they make flour, the millstone or whatever. And just by doing these kind of analogies, or just so much like separating from the stresses in the day to day and the two personalities involved, and saying, but has this lumberjack ever been given their axe or told where the axes are, then it's, oh, okay. Yes. All right. That's helpful.
I love that. That's so, so amazing. So simple, just a simple change. And it really just changes what could be or could become a kind of a contentious conversation that I'm sure many HR professionals are listening. And I know I am like, oh yeah, I've been there. I've had that conversation and it's been not my favorite. So I love that. I think that's such a fabulous way to use humor that most people aren't thinking about. Since you do a lot of work with clients around culture, I think you have an amazing kind of insight into organizations, into kind of what cultures are kind of dominant currently in our society of work. So where do you think humor is needed the most, in HR or just in organizations more broadly?
Yeah, I think organizations more broadly, you know, including HR, and I think that the good news about all those chemical benefits, including the one that makes you more inclined to connect with somebody, that's universal. So that can apply to, you know, the HR person and their HRBP internal clients and other functions, between two HR people, between two salespeople. Just this idea of, you know, leveraging humor as a form of connection can really help bond and make real bonds in ways that can be hard to do without humor. I think that the more it can be promoted and kind of almost like destigmatized as an intervention in the professional setting, the better. People may fear humor because, you know, they think of like negative humor, putting people down or whatever. Mm-hmm. Of course, it should be leveraged carefully and not to bring others down. It should be occasionally you can do self-deprecating, but generally yes. It's looking at the funny quirks of, you know, human nature and, you know, the foibles of life and kind of observing those and seeing them for the funniness that they are, as opposed to, you know, putting somebody down. So I think if there's some kind of sense of the rules of the game, then it's like, of course it makes sense to have humor. You know, if you're doing if you see dating profiles or whatever, it's like sense of humor. Why would that not apply to people you're spending hours and hours with during the workday? And why is sense of humor only important, you know, in your personal relationships? So it may be fear and the humor. If you go to a stand-up club, like I've done stand-up comedy without the need to curse or to do kind of shocking sex jokes or whatever. But if people think of that as humor, then it's kind of like, ooh, yeah, that doesn't sound workplace appropriate. But there's a huge universe of humor that is workplace appropriate. And I think that people just may be putting that risky label on the whole humor thing, whereas it's only a small subset that's risky.
Exactly. I mean, listen, I laugh at Disney movies. I'm laughing at Pixar movies. I'm laughing so hard sometimes at kids' cartoons. There is PG humor works on all of us. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to get risque to be humorous. I'm like, as we're talking, I'm thinking of a very funny story. And you could be like, oh, this is terrible advice, Stephanie. Please do if you think it's terrible advice. But I remember we were having a meeting. This is years ago now, but we were having a meeting, and it was a medium-sized meeting. There were a wide variety of, you know, senior leaders versus, you know, individual contributors on the meeting. And I was a member of the senior leadership team. There are other senior leaders who were on the call. And one of the senior leaders was kind of being a jerk. And I don't think he realized he was being a jerk. He was being dismissive. We were talking about land acquisition in different areas of town, specifically in the area of town I live. And some of his commentary around the land was really, it was not very classy. And it could have been misconstrued by, I personally didn't really care, but certainly others on the team could have felt like he was being, you know, elitist or discriminatory, all of these things. And I think what's tricky is, like, you're not in a meeting like that, even as an HR leader, unless it's really aggressive, going to be like, hey, listen, you can't talk like that. You can't do that. So I ended up using humor as a way to, like, subtly say, like, hey, this is like to like indicate to everyone, like, yeah, ignore this energy, but also kind of call out like you're being a jerk. There's like an old like film processing plant like a few miles away from where I live. Yeah. And like he had referenced that and in this kind of crummy way of describing things. And I was like, oh gosh, that must be why I've grown this extra toe. And so like it shut down his conversation and it got people to laugh and kind of move on. But I think it shut him down in knowing like, hey, you're being a jerk. And for me, that's what I found powerful, because a lot of times in HR, you're expected to call out bad behavior. And then sometimes that can be really, really tricky sometimes. But there are ways to infuse humor, almost like how you described as that third space, to be like, hey, like, think about what you're actually saying. Like, yes. And so I was thinking that as we were talking, I was like, oh, that was so funny. Like, what a good joke, Stephanie. I just wanted to share the joke again, maybe.
I'm thinking of the Simpsons fish with the extra eye as well.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, if I was in that scenario, I could see myself maybe, you know, putting up Zillow as like, you know, because I live in that neighborhood. My dude, my property price is dropping in real time, you know, pump the brakes.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So it'd be something a little bit third spacey. It's like about my property price versus him being a jerk, but kind of gets the message, and you can't let it go unaddressed in real time because once everyone leaves the room, then the company has endorsed that behavior.
It's a way where you can address it, and it sends the message without when you are really aggressively addressing bad behavior, it can kind of just put everything to a halt. And sometimes that needs to happen. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, for sure. But you can definitely, and I have some other examples, but they may involve some swear words. So we'll leave them off the podcast since we're being well behaved on this one. But humor is just really, it's such a powerful tool. And I bet if everyone listening in sat back and reflected on how they've used humor in their life, how they've used humor at work, how they've seen it used. Surprisingly, it's coming up more frequently than we probably realize.
I would imagine so, yeah. And I think that it's just a very powerful connection builder. I like to use it for, you know, showing expertise. And also in my business, I'm a headhunter. So, you know, you probably heard from working with many clients and things, this idea of Dunbar's number, where you can only really know 150 people well.
Yes.
But that wouldn't work so well for my clients. You know, it's like, oh, you're pitching Brad again. We didn't like him last time. So, having some way to connect quickly with people can be a very practical, like not at all extraneous or, you know, luxury activity when you do need to establish and maintain a large network. So it may sound like I'm, you know, being very unfunny in my very overly scientific in my use of humor. But, you know, I think it can be like a competitive advantage. I do humor talks quite a bit on like Disrupt HR and stuff like that. And they get a lot of views, and that, you know, and because people enjoy them, it kind of builds a little bit of goodwill out there. Like, oh yeah, Peter, the culture doctor guy. Yeah. He's funny as well. You know? So just like staying on top of people's minds and maybe doing a humorous post. Thank you for liking my Tommy Lee Jones post earlier today.
I was trying to post a picture of Harrison Ford from The Fugitive 2, but LinkedIn wouldn't let me. It's like LinkedIn's like, stop it, Stephanie. But I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So for the audience, that was a reference to, you know, it was Tommy Lee Jones' face from The Fugitive. And he's like, you know, we're going to do a hard target search of every outhouse, hen house and dog house. Your fugitive is any remote employee. the sort of the third spacey point there is to maybe leaders I know out there is like, you know, do you really want to be that guy who's treating, you know, the people who you let go live in far-flung places during COVID, and that you're now hunting them down like fugitives to come back to the office? So it's, you know, these are certainly things I care about. I don't, you know, just push nonsense on LinkedIn, but I do like to combine an idea that I care about with some nonsense. And I found that can be a really powerful combination.
Yes, it can make a really powerful point. We've talked about connection so many times already in this podcast too. And it's like the obvious thing, there are so many organizations out there, and there's even, you know, the Surgeon General declared a loneliness epidemic last year. Humor, How can we encourage? How can we lead with humor? And what a fun tool to help tackle the loneliness epidemic. Humor. I love it. It's my new favorite officially.
Yeah. Maybe you can do some interventions with humor, you know, a Zoom stand up, maybe.
Zoom stand up. I feel like Zoom stand up would be like, that would be hard because like you're not getting any of the reaction. Like you can't read the room at all. Oof, that's rough.
Well, you know, I would say for people who don't consider themselves funny, give it a try. You know, okay. I guess.
My next question. What about those folks who are like, but I'm not funny? That's great, Stephanie and Peter, but I'm not funny.
Yeah, maybe you are. Maybe you've got a bit of a deadpan style or something. You know, that person, obviously not you. I know you're funny, but the hypothetical I'm not funny person. There's probably different ways to use humor. You know, that there's that old research of, you know, public speaking is scarier than death for some people. So I can only imagine that doing that public speaking and for it to be funny would be like double death for a certain member of a certain percentage of the audience. But you know, there's different ways to do humor. Like one-on-one is certainly a lot safer than an open mic at a local comedy club. Your Simpsons, memes are amazing. So, you know, there's a way for everybody to make new connections and foster existing connections using humor. And you don't have to, you know, have this, you know, confident stage presence or whatever for a lot of those different potential avenues.
Absolutely. I also think when someone is not necessarily, you know, prone to humor or being funny or cracking a joke, when they do it, it has been funnier. It's like the best thing that ever happened. It's like, oh my goodness. It's like the priest cracked a joke and you're like, wait, what just happened? This is the funniest moment ever. Because there's that unexpected element. And I would offer, we all have very different senses of humor. You know, my husband, every time my brother and I are the only two siblings, every time we get together, he's like, I don't even know what you guys are talking about or laughing about. It is this very specific thing.
Like lots of jokes and callbacks and
Oh, yes. Like we've got skits. We have a song about Ronnie Lott. Like we have everything. But know that your humor, like lean into what's genuine to you, what feels funny to you. And I think that works better than anything. And you'll find your people, you'll find the people who get it. And if nothing else, the people will appreciate that you have a sense of humor, even if it's different than your own.
Yeah, Carol. For sure. Yeah. And to your point earlier, I meant to, you know, underscore it about HR people almost having like a secret weapon. They're like the last person you expect to be funny. And like when I met my first truly hilarious HR person in my career, I was like, oh my God, we can do that. You know, it was so empowering. You know, she was a total hoot. And so then I, you know, felt all the more empowered to use humor. And I think, because it's often an unexpected source and you can get that surprise effect. Even if you were funny all along and knew you were funny, but they just didn't see it coming.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Peter, this has been so fun. What a delightful conversation and interesting and informative conversation too. So grateful that you made time to chat with us. I would love to make sure if folks want to follow along your work, hear your amazing jokes, potentially even work with you on, you know, placements or with the culture work they do, where can they find you?
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, as always. So valuesculture.com is this humble neighborhood culture doctor's home. You can also check me out on LinkedIn, Peter, last name Phelan. And Vimeo has some of my comedy on there. Just look, I'll search under my name. And placing HR people is definitely the what I spend most time doing and most enjoy doing. Culture projects a close second. So would always welcome any inbounds on either front.
Amazing. Perfect. Peter, thank you so much. What a fun conversation. What a powerful conversation. I reached out to Peter because I was desperate to finally talk about humor on the podcast. And I am so grateful for what a great conversation we had.